This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. Ira Barnes. Well, Mr. Barnes, can you tell us something about your family background?
This I will try to do. My family has been here since before the Civil War. My mother's family, her father was a young attorney and in Cincinnati, or just out of Cincinnati. The federal government took over the family farm to an army camp known as Camp Denison. One of the lieutenants in the army told my grandfather as a young attorney to be sure and come to Decatur and not to go to Springfield because Springfield would never get out of the mud. So my grandfather and his bride came to Decatur. They went to the Johns home out on Johns Hill and went up into the top of the tower to look over the land around Decatur. And they have made Decatur their home ever since. In fact, it was in their home where I was born. My father's family came from Claremont, New Hampshire. My father's grandfather's brother was W.A. Barnes, and he came here to Decatur in the 1850s and started a drugstore. Soon, my grandfather met him here and stayed until in the late 1850s when he left and went to Jackson, Mississippi. He taught school. At the outbreak of the Civil War, he decided to come back to Decatur, smuggled his money out between the pages of his textbooks, came back to Decatur, and went to Claremont, New Hampshire, where he married my grandmother, and then back to Decatur. That is the family background.
Well, Mr. Barnes, you certainly do know a lot about the history of Decatur, and your family's played an important part. Well, let's go back to your childhood. What was it like to be a child in Decatur when you were growing up?
Well, I think it was fun. Now, we didn't have the same things that we do today, but we had fun. We enjoyed the things that we did. We roller skated down the mound there on West North and rode in wagons and slid down the hills. Then once in a while, we get to go to a ball game out at Downey Field or out to the circus. We used to ride the old open streetcars. So that was a fun thing to do. The circuses were out there too, and the racetrack. I never did get to go to a horse race, but we had horse races out there. I remember walking to school in a pair of rubber boots with red tops, and the snow was almost up to my knees, but not anymore. We don't have that kind of snow. Of course, my knees are higher now than they used to.
You walked to school all the time?
Oh, of course. We only lived a couple of blocks from Gaspin School, and it was real easy. But I was supposed to get home early and not loiter on the way home. And I remember very vividly one time I loitered, and at noontime, and my dad peeled a switch and stood me up on the front porch and whipped my knees, and all the little kids went home and came back to school saying, "Harry got a lick." So I didn't loiter anymore.
What other games did you play? We played a little baseball,
a kind of baseball. That was about all there was. Mm-hmm. I remember birthday celebrations used to be really fantastic. I'm not a big chicken eater, but my birthday coming in July, it was then that we had the first fried chicken of the year on my birthday. And we always sent up paper balloons, which are strictly forbidden now by all fire codes, but we always sent them up on my birthday.
You had a big celebration.
Oh, absolutely, a big celebration. All the grandparents and everything, everybody was there.
You mentioned that fried chicken in July. Didn't have it all the year round.
Oh, my good. Yeah, no, we just had to go out the country and get the chickens.
And they had to grow big enough.
Well, they had to be big enough to fry by the 2nd of July.
Well, you really had some good times.
We did. I think it was fun.
And you told us a little bit about your schooling. I think you said you walked to Gaspin School.
Walked to Gaspin.
After Gaspin.
Well, then we went to Central Junior High, which is now gone. And at Central Junior High, we always got out at 10 minutes after 12. And St. Patrick's bell rang at 12. And to this day, like Pavlov's dogs, I get hungry every time I hear St. Patrick's bell. Then they had finished Roosevelt Junior High, but they had started that before the war, but during the war they had discontinued it. And after the armistice in 18, they finished the building, and I was the first class in and out. I was only there 1 year.
Excuse me, when you're talking about war, that was the first
World War One, WW1.
Right. Well, go on.
We were the ones that picked out the blue and gold comet and the screw colors and whatnot, and then we left. Then from there we went to Stephen Decatur for 3 years, and that building is gone too now.
That's where the Civic Center is now.
Yes, that's where the Civic Center is now.
But you went there for 3 years.
Yes, and my father told me I was wasting my time. I might as well go somewhere where I could learn something. I got to add something. My father always said he was going to give me an education, something that no one could take away from me. And that he intended to do. I think he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, from Phillips at Texas.
Phillips, Exeter, to Harvard for 4 years.
And then, maybe we're ready to find out how you decided on a career.
Well, that was kind of strange because I leaned toward medicine, and my father told me, and I think that was one of the bad pieces of advice he ever gave me, that he always said there were better ways of starving to death than practicing medicine.
He evidently wasn't thinking about today, was he?
That's right. Well, he started practice in 1900, and you know, things were a little tough.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say that he'd go out to the end of the streetcar line and then carry his bag out through the mud that was pulling his rubbers off, and he didn't think that was a great deal of fun.
Well, a doctor's life was hard in those days.
As he said, there are better ways of starving to death. So I went into industrial chemistry from that point on, and that's why.
And you got your training and your background in that field at Harvard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then what kind of jobs did you have?
Well, I tell you, I came back here in the 30s, which was, jobs were not too plentiful, and they would always say, we're shooting better men than you are, and you know. So I did nothing for a little while, and my father died shortly, and then I spent a lot of time trying to replenish or refurbish some of the real estate that he had, until the World War II broke out, and then I went to work for Atlas Powder Company in St. Louis. And from there on, it was Caterpillar Tractor, and then Houdai Hershey, and BorgWarner. Millikan University, I taught there for 2 years.
Well, you had a very
I've had a checkered career. I've been around.
And you're retired now?
Yes, I've been retired for over 10 years.
What was your job before?
Well, I was a metallurgist at BorgWarner in their nuclear division. We were building control rods for nuclear vessels. And of course, that when the BorgWarner decided to get out of that field, that closed the whole business for us, we were concerned. And I think it was a mistake because the nuclear industry is still big, and it's got to be. BorgWarner didn't see it that way. One of the thrills of my experience at BorgWarner was being sent down to the Navy Yard to work on the reactor of the Enterprise, the world's largest nuclear carrier at that time. That was a thrill.
Where was it then?
At Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It was in for refitting.
Mm-hmm. And that was part of your job?
Part of my job. Yeah, I loved
and
every
bonus
minute.
Bonus, too.
Yeah, really, it was a bonus.
What about the history of BorgWarner here?
I really...
You don't know very much about it?
Well, you see, they came here originally in the carburetor industry, and then they went from that to the automotive air conditioning. And then from there, they have given up, I guess, on carburetors now. That division is closing out. And that was the division I worked for, the carburetor division. Only we were a subdivision known as IMPAC, which stood for Electromechanical Power and Controls, I think.
And you were there when you retired?
Yes, I was there 10 years and retired then. Well, when they closed the plant, I was so close to retirement that I might as well take a little early retirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about the future of industry in Decatur?
Well, that looks bad right now, but I think it's coming. It's bound to come. And I like to quote my grandfather, who said that when he was here in the 1850s, that with the coal, the water, the lumber, and the agricultural soil we had here, Decatur should have been known as the Queen City of the Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And I am inclined to go along with him on that. And I still think, as bad as it looks, I think we're going to come out of this and go away.
Well, certainly should be a demand for products after
all. Oh, there has to be, yes.
Well, let's see if you could look back and see what are some of the big changes that you've seen in Decatur since you
well, obviously, that time. Obviously paved streets are the biggest thing. Decatur was always, my grandfather said Decatur was an island in the springtime because Stevens Creek on the north and west and the Sangamon River on the north and east, or on the south and east, Decatur and Ireland, island. The soil and the water just made a beautiful mud, and Decatur, I think, has been a kind of a mud capital.
So that was rather ironic that they told your grandfather to come to Decatur because
this whole area is good for mud. In the early days, of course, we couldn't get out of town when there was a rain. Even the horse and buggy, you didn't go out of town. And I know we used to spend Sunday afternoons riding the streetcars out to the end of the line and turn around and come back with the whole family because you couldn't go anywhere else.
And in the winter,
you just hold up and stay. Well, I remember the farmers couldn't deliver their crops until the ground froze. Mm-hmm.
So it's certain the roads have made a big difference and draining.
Well, I heard it said, and I don't know who said it, but if it wasn't for quinine, Illinois, it would still be a swamp. If, you know, to keep the yellow fever or the malaria down, it would get the tiles in.
And other changes, have you noticed others, other than the...
Well, of course, the size and the roads, transportation, well, of course, you know, entertainment is considerably different.
Right.
I was going to point out, I don't know why, but the old Powers Opera House, I was fortunate enough to see Helen Keller and, Peter Pan, Maude Adams and Peter Pan.
There were some great productions.
There really were. And I remember hearing Harry Lauder. He was at the Lincoln Theater, though. That was, you know, after the fire and the rebuild.
A number of people have spoken about the fire at the Powers Opera House. And
that was in 1914. I remember that very vividly.
What interest do you have?
I'm interested in everything.
Good.
No, I had to give up reading for a while. Now I'm back to reading again. I like to play golf, and I enjoy my grandson and family, and I just have a great time.
Let's talk a minute about your grandchildren. Are you encouraged about their future?
I worry about what they
have to face.
Yeah. There isn't a darn thing I can do about it, and probably it won't be as bad as we think it is.
After all, we've come through some bad times in the past.
I think I've got faith for them. I think they'll make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they have as rich and full a life as you've had, they should do very well.
I hope they do. I couldn't ask for more.
It certainly has been a pleasure to hear about your experiences and about your family here in Decatur and the part that they have played. And I thank you very much for recording for us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. You have been listening to the experiences of Mr. Ira Barnes, recorded for the Decatur Public Library, and this is Betty Turnell. Mr. Barnes, let's add a bit to your program here. You were telling me about how they used to broadcast, so to speak, the scores or plays of the World Series here in Decatur, before radio, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, before radio or before television. They used to just have a man stand up in the window there on the second floor with a megaphone, and he would call out the plays to the people standing in the streets below. That was one of the changes that I've seen in Decatur.
The plays would come to him
by telephone or telegraph, I'm sure.
So he would, in a sense, broadcast.
Broadcast it to the people standing down in the streets below. And then, of course, the other thing, that all the news items were on the bulletins in the paper window. And, during the Armistice Day, those windows were just plastered full on the night before.
So people would come down and read.
Uh-huh. Or you'd drive by and read. I was always told to stay away from the river as a small boy. And one afternoon we were driving around, and my father saw a bulletin in the window that a young man had been drowned down at the river. He took me down there, and we stayed until he saw the carry that young, until I saw him carry that young boy out of the river into the ambulance. And he said, "Now you see why I don't want you playing down at the river."
Your father was a great teacher.
Oh, he was. He loved to teach, and he taught the hard way something.
But you probably learned his
lesson. I remember, yes.
Well, thank you very much.